Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Sometimes the safest place is the most dangerous. You're tuned in to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott.
Thanks for joining us. Today, we are peeling back the layers of the investigation into the brutal murders of Abby Williams and Liberty German, focusing on the man at the center of one of the investigation's most baffling chapters. Not Richard Allen, Ron Logan. Despite the bodies of the victims being discovered on his property and the damning FBI affidavit pointing to him as a key suspect, local investigators suddenly shifted their focus elsewhere. Yes, elsewhere. FBI was one of the first to investigate this, went out to Ron's house, investigated, pieced things together, pulled things apart. Even the agent said, "I believe Ron Logan is our guy." Shortly after doing all of that, local authorities said, "I don't think so. He's not our guy. We're gonna look elsewhere." Why? There was a lot of evidence here. What led to Logan's inconsistent alibis, including asking for a fake one before the bodies were even discovered? And how did this sudden pivot in the investigation impact the families of Abby and Libby, who were left to wonder if critical evidence was ignored? Joining us is psychotherapist Siobhan Scott to delve into the psychological profile of Ron Logan, the dynamics of the investigation, and the ripple effects on the families and the victims. Siobhan, with so much circumstantial evidence here pointing to Ron Logan, including his fabricated alibi, which he put together before the bodies were even found, his proximity to the crime scene and his behavioral patterns, what do you think was going on in his mind during that time?
And yeah.
What's the psychology of guilt or something else entirely?
It's really fascinating to speculate about. And I'm confused at this point. I'm just very confused. And what would be going on in his mind if he were guilty would certainly be, how can he do everything in his power to get his story straight, which is, you know, kind of what it sounds like he was doing, and get himself, you know, somewhere speculatingly away from the scene of the crime. Mm-hmm. But we don't really know. And that's, I think, the thing that's so tormenting about this case, is there's just so much that feels unfinished. And I would guess that that's hard on the families to feel like, you know, this is, they wanted closure. And is there closure at this point? It doesn't seem like it.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because I know a lot of the families, from what I've heard, I've not talked to them personally, but I've talked to many people who have, that many of them do feel like they found closure here. They feel like, okay, we've inserted somebody into the space. Yeah. And many believe that they got their guy, Richard Allen. Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit. Because I understand a family, you'd certainly want closure if something that horrible happened to you, but at what cost? Just so you feel like they got the right guy, even if there's massive amounts of evidence to point that, no, the right guy is not behind bars. How does someone deal with that when they're going through such grief? Are they capable of dealing with something like that and finding true justice for who killed their kids?
I would imagine that it's different for all of them. And even though we have a desire to feel like, okay, we finally have the truth, we finally have a story, we can, in essence, put this away to some degree now, I would still think that the more that comes out and the more that we can speculate about other suspects and other possibilities, that it would still be nagging for many of them, that they would still be wondering late at night, you know, was this really what happened?
Let's talk about the behavior of Ron Logan and basically play, is it incriminating or not? And is this normal behavior? Is this behavior that others have exhibited? when something horrible happens on or near their property. How about an alibi? Literally reaching out to your friend and saying, hey, I want you to say that we went to the fish store at this day, at this time, which happens to be about the time where the girls were murdered, in case anybody asks. The problem with it, though, is he asked this person to do this before the bodies were even found. So,
incredibly incriminating.
Yes.
It's out of the realm of what most of us would even ponder. You know, I think most of us, if there were missing kids, we'd be out scouring the property. We'd be out looking. We'd be out trying to do anything we could to help, not trying to get an alibi for the time of the disappearance. That's definitely a red flag. It's odd.
Is it a far cry? Because I'm trying to break this down, because sometimes the obvious is not really the answer. A lot of times it is. Is it a far cry to say, and this is just pure speculation, he's near his property, he ends up seeing there's two bodies on it. I don't know why you wouldn't call the police at that exact moment, but he did have, he was on parole, so he had a parole violation actually for driving his vehicle when he shouldn't be, which ended up putting him back in jail. But is it crazy to think that, oh my God, there's bodies on my property. I had nothing to do with this. So I'm not even going to raise my hand and say, hey, there's bodies down here. I'm just going to make sure I have an alibi because I didn't do this, so I don't get in more trouble than I've already been in.
Boy, that would be a terrible error in judgment.
Yes.
But as we often say, people who commit violent crimes are often not very smart people. And they have poor judgment, which is how they get caught so often. So it's certainly another possibility. And again, another sign that this would be a person who thinks in rather aberrant ways.
We also have a behavioral pattern here that leans a lot more towards Ron Logan than it does Richard Allen, and that would be in forms of violence. There are several exes of his who have, in fact, testified to the FBI that he was insanely abusive to them. Put one of them in the hospital with 7 stitches because he grabbed a wrench. I didn't have this prop here for this bit, but I was working on things in the studio. So, but literally, I mean, it's interesting because you pick up a wrench and you go, that's heavy. This could be, if you strike this against someone's head with a lot of force, I would think you may have to do the calculation that may kill that person fairly quickly and not just put them in the hospital with stitches. But that's what he did to one of his girlfriends. Someone who has the propensity to do something like that, I think would have the propensity to kill kids as well. I think it's kind of one of those things, either it's in you or it's not in you. And we already knew it clearly was in Ron Logan.
Yeah, it's certainly another disturbing sign, another red flag. There is a bit of a difference in types of violence with somebody who has an impulsive, hot-blooded response when they're angry and they pick up something and they hit their partner, they hit someone. And that's a bit different than the person who commits a sexual murder, because the sexual murder is usually part of a fantasy life that's been fantasized about for a long time, often for years or even decades. And so it's a bit of a different kind of violence, but it does speak to somebody who has antisocial tendencies, which means psychopathic tendencies. And that, again, is a person that if I were in law enforcement, I would be looking at that person very closely.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of speculation about the blood in this case. Where did it go? Because there wasn't a ton of it at the crime scene. There was some, but there was a lot that is unaccounted for when they found the girls' bodies. The FBI believes the bodies were moved. And if you had to move the body and remove the blood, I mean, the people who have seen the actual crime scene photos have said to me that, I mean, it looks like they took a bath or like somebody really cleaned them up after there was the box cutter to their throats. That's not a normal crime scene. That would, you'd have to be moving them around to do that and be in a place where you could easily clean them up and then put them back in some other area. That would, I think, indicate, and I believe the FBI agrees, it would indicate that you probably have to have a location really close by to do that in private and then bring them back out. You couldn't just like dip them in the creek and they're done. Again, Ron Logan's house right there.
Yeah, it's another speculative possibility that would make sense. And it would be lovely if the FBI had found some blood evidence, you know. Again, if we had DNA, it would make this case so much easier.
And the problem with a lot of that is the way that the investigation went was the FBI was investigating it initially. They shared all of their findings with the local authorities. And once they did that, the local authorities in Delphi said, "We're good. We got this." The FBI is saying, "Look, we're going to set up a database for tips, and we're good. We got this in Delphi." So they were kicked out. And all the information, even after they went through, raided Ron Logan's house, all that information was left with the local authorities to do what they would with, and they did nothing. They said, "We're going in a different direction now." Again, this does start to very much look like a cover-up. Again, horrible police work could mean that too. But when you have this amount of evidence, I think even the worst Keystone cop that would be looking at this would go, this seems kind of like our guy. What sort of incentive, what sort of reasoning would be going through someone's mind to not investigate that angle further rather than the CVS guy who has no history of violence, who raised his hand and said, "Hey, how can I help? I was out there hiking that day." What would make someone shift so dramatically off of such strong evidence towards someone to someone with very, very weak evidence towards them other than saying, "Hey, I was out there that day"?
It makes no sense. It makes no sense. I can't even wrap my head around why somebody would make the decision to ignore evidence like that. So was it a case of just somebody came up with the who they thought was the perpetrator? They developed a story around it, and then they just dug in, and it was going to be that or nothing. And logically, it doesn't make sense.
There's just so many questions in this case of how we got from there to here. The more I've dug into the Ron Logan angle on this, the more I'm just shocked. And all of these things never introduced into court. So the jury that convicted Richard Allen never saw some of these graphics. I'm just going to pull that up here again real quick to show. This is Bridge Guy. This is Ron Allen. Bridge Guy. Ron. I know it's not a super scientific comparison, but it's a hell of a lot better than anything we saw that made it look like Richard Allen was at the crime scene. You know, you add that in with the alibi, you add that in with the propensity for violence. What do you think some of those jurors may be feeling now if, say, they watched this show or any of the many others who are pointing out the things they didn't get to know about?
Yeah. I would love to be able to talk to them. I mean, it would be fascinating to know how they're responding to it. Is it a case where I think some people would just double down because it would make them too uncomfortable, you know, to experience the dissonance that they'd feel if thinking maybe they convicted the wrong person? But I would think others would be very eager to get the whole story.
Yeah.
So would be interesting to know.
It almost feels like a violation of the jurors, where you did not give them the full story, and then you asked them to literally put a man away, a father of two, a husband, no criminal history, for the rest of his life.
But
you'd have guilt, but you'd also have to have the understanding that, well, I didn't have the full picture. Right. I was just going with what I knew. But that, to me, just seems like a horrible ethical, moral, probably even legal in some ways, violation of those jurors who are doing their simple duty. That is just, it's just adding more victims to this whole scenario.
Yeah, it's a good way to look at it, that, you know, how unfair is it to the jurors if they're not given all the relevant information to base a decision on?
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in, and then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a five-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.